There is 1 week to go before Election Day in the United States, and we are devoting today's programme to an extended discussion on the latest from the presidential race. Monocle's editors and correspondents join me to discuss those stories today here on the Late Edition on Monocle 24. Hello there and a very warm welcome to you to the Late Edition here on Monocle 24. It is Tuesday, the 27th of October, and I'm Thomas Lewis here in Toronto. And joining us today from London are Monocle 24's Daniel Bache and Monocle's news editor, Chris Chermak. Chris, Daniel, great to have you both with us on the programme today. Chris, how's the week shaping up for you there? It's a busy news week, as I'm sure you don't need me to tell you, but how are things looking from your vantage point there in London?
It's absolutely a busy week, Thomas. We're preparing for the election next week, preparing our plans for coverage, different things we can bring across our magazines, the radio, of course, as well as the Monocle Minute. And then in addition to that, we're, of course, battling with a growing pandemic here in Europe and been working on a series of letters looking at different types of responses from European capitals to this second wave that we're having. So lots of stuff going on.
And Daniel, lots of stuff going on for you too there in London. How's the week treating you so far?
Yeah, just a few things. As Chris points out, I am on the early shift producing The Globalist, and it's a very busy week for us, of course. Always interesting as a Canadian to look at the magnitude of the U.S. election, something we are will do on this show and have been doing quite a bit in recent days. We've got a great series on The Globalist this week, sort of highlighting some of the interesting facets of the election that will play a big part, have been playing a big part in voting, as we will talk about. So that has been interesting to be at the helm of the program and to help our listeners get ready for what is a massive Tuesday next week.
A massive Tuesday indeed, Daniel. Well, Daniel, Chris, it's great to have you both with us on the programme today. Well, as we heard there is 1 week to go before Election Day in the United States. More than 66 million Americans have already voted, which is a record. And the pace of the campaign in this final week is frenetic, to put it lightly. The tone of the campaign today has sharpened following last night's ceremony at the White House, in which Amy Coney Barrett was sworn in as a justice on the US Supreme Court. A little earlier today, we spoke to Scott Lucas, a professor of US politics at the University of Birmingham in the UK, who gave us his assessment of the response from both parties to the new Conservative majority on the US Supreme Court.
The Senate majority leader said, look, you know, whatever happens at the elections next week, we now have a court for decades to come. In other words, if McConnell's type of Republicans don't like the bills that are put through Congress, if they don't like who is in the White House, they don't have to observe checks and balances. They could effectively abuse that system to try to use the court as a political weapon. McConnell has pursued this not only on the Supreme Court, he's pursued it all through the federal court levels since 2017, and that will be his legacy. So in some ways, I think what we're saying today is that Donald Trump's not the most important person in the room. Whatever happens next week, the two most important people are Amy Coney Barrett and Mitch McConnell.
Scott Lucas there speaking to us a little earlier today. Chris, you spoke to us yesterday on the programme about Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation to the US Supreme Court. The court is currently ruling on several cases that will have a tangible effect on these closing days of early voting, notably last night's ruling on Wisconsin's early voting rules. Can you round that up for us and explain a little of what that ruling means?
Yes, Thomas, it's interesting hearing that clip from Scott Lucas because he does talk about the future of the court, obviously. But before that, as you say, there will be some relatively small but significant ways that the Supreme Court, with Amy Coney Barrett on board, can influence the election ahead of next week already, now that she's in the job. And these rulings on early voting, on mail-in voting as well, are particularly where you can see the effects of this. So, for example, last night, the Supreme Court voted 5-3 in the case in Wisconsin, basically rejecting rules, rejecting a lower court's ruling, a lower federal court's ruling, that said that mail-in ballots could come in after November 3rd and still be counted. So that's one of the examples of the kinds of things that this is about because of the pandemic. As you mentioned before, many people, millions, are voting early. About 80 million people have requested mail-in ballots. The question is, with so many being requested, how many of these are going to get in by election day? Are people going to send them in on time? Is the Postal Service going to be able to deliver them on time? So there's been various court battles over this, whether that deadline, if you will, can be extended. For example, in my own state, to give an example where I vote as an American in Maryland, by the laws there, I can send my ballot, as long as it's postmarked by November 3rd, it can arrive up to 10 days later. These are the kind of things that are before the Supreme Court. Yesterday in Wisconsin, 5-3, the court voted no, the ballots in Wisconsin have to arrive by election day or they will not be counted. By contrast to that, and I know this is a long way of explaining it, but there was an earlier case a week before that, which was divided 4-4 in Pennsylvania for a similar, actually, court ruling. And in the Pennsylvania case, they actually said, yes, you can send your ballots in later. Or you can send your ballots in by November 3rd. If they arrive later, they will still be counted. Who was the key difference in those two votes? Well, it was Chief Justice John Roberts. And he made a relatively small distinction between the two cases, basically saying that in Wisconsin, it was a federal lower court that had ruled. He felt he had a right to overrule them. But in the case of Pennsylvania, it was a state court that had said that they could go up to, you know, they could vote up to 10 days later. That was okay. That was a state's priority. What's interesting is if Amy Coney Barrett now becomes a member of the court, even Chief Justice John Roberts is no longer the swing vote. He tends to be the more moderate of the conservatives among the eight that are currently there, nine with Amy Coney Barrett. So you take a case like Pennsylvania, if Amy Coney Barrett had been a member of the court, it likely would have been ruled 5-4 that also Pennsylvania must have its mail-in ballots arrive by November 3rd. So this is just a small way in which you see what kind of significant impact Amy Coney Barrett could already have on the court, as there are some other cases like this about mail-in ballots pending in the next coming days, also in North Carolina and potentially again in Pennsylvania. So a lot to watch for the next week. In short, for any listeners that are in the U.S., I would advise you to get your ballots in as soon as possible. Send them. Some states are suggesting send your ballots or even absentee ballots, drop them off instead of mailing them in, or send them immediately to make sure that they do arrive by November 3rd in case the court intervenes in these kinds of ways to change the rules that currently exist in your state.
And Chris, I'm not sure if you picked up a copy of the New York Times on Sunday, but there was a full-page ad from the U.S. Postal Service trying to allay fears, it seemed to me, that the Postal Service had allocated extra funds to ensure that votes would be received and processed in an appropriate and timely manner, which I thought was quite an interesting move given how politically hot the president has made the U.S. Postal Service during this election campaign so far. Well, Donald Trump is visiting three states today, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And a little earlier, we spoke to Suzanne Lynch. She is the Washington correspondent for the Irish Times newspaper. She gave us a glimpse of the mood in Trump-supporting corners of some of the key swing states at play in this election.
I think it's mostly about Donald Trump and, you know, people. And I think there's my own anecdotal experience. I went down to Ohio yesterday where I went to a Donald Trump Jr. rally, and I spoke to voters, Trump supporters there, who didn't vote in 2016 and are voting now. So I think, you cannot underestimate how motivated Donald Trump supporters are. And it's not just, I mean, the narrative is, you know, he's just concentrating on his base that already have. He's got those votes in the bag. But those people yesterday, for example, I spoke to didn't vote in 2016. They're going to add to the vote this time around. So I think you're going to see a lot of turnout on the Republican side, even though all the talk at the moment is about early voting and generally Democrats are more tend to vote earlier. The Trump campaign are saying this is not worrying them. They feel that their people will get out on the day. So really, when the margins are this small, it is about turnout.
Suzanne Lynch there of the Irish Times newspaper, speaking to us a little earlier today. Daniel, it's all about turnout, as we heard from Suzanne Lynch there. And it is a busy day for campaign appearances today to try and boost that, I suppose, come election day itself. Barack Obama is in Orlando in Florida on behalf of Joe Biden. Jill Biden, the former Second Lady, she's in Maine today, where there's an incredibly tight Senate race unfolding. Vice President Mike Pence is in North Carolina. Melania Trump is scheduled to appear in Pennsylvania. It's a busy day. Do you get a sense, Daniel, that, you know, with all these appearances, with this real sort of frenetic tempo, that minds can be swayed at this relatively late stage now, I guess, given that so many votes have already been cast?
Yeah, it's really interesting to see the level of campaigning that is going on this late in the game. I mean, we might often see that. Of course, this year is very, very different, of course, given the fact that we are still in the midst of this pandemic. You know, what's interesting to me is the fact that a lot of places which would have been safe havens for Donald Trump and the Republican Party are seemingly not so in these final days of the election. If you look at those polls and places we've already pointed out and even states like Texas, not a shoe-in for Donald Trump. So I think he realizes that, but at the same time, he is going to continue to do this no matter what. So much of it, of course, is about inflating his ego. He's not even, in many cases, talking about the issues, rather just his past record on things like the economy, which we have to point out was inherited from the past administration. It is quite hard to lose the White House for a president, but I think the reality is really setting in for that party. So they will continue. To your point and to your question about whether hearts and minds can be changed, I think it's more about actually getting people out to vote. That has been made more difficult, obviously, by the circumstances that we are in. And that is why there's been such a huge interest in mail-in and early voting. I think it's down to how many people actually turn out. There are so many factors, as we've talked about on the show in past, on an election day, be it weather, be it a big storm, or other things that get in the way in people's lives. But I think it's less about changing people's minds at this point, but really igniting a fire to get people out and to want to cast a ballot, perhaps to make sure that the candidate they don't want to win isn't elected, if that makes sense to you, Tomas.
It makes perfect sense, Daniel. Well, to get a sense of how far the fire has been ignited, as you put it there, Daniel, in the minds of some voters, I spoke late last week to Linda Chavez. She was a White House official under US President Ronald Reagan. And she told me on the phone from Washington, D.C., what her sense was of the election's trajectory at this stage.
I'm not quite sure I'd be ready to bet the farm on it. It's been such a crazy season, but I think it's looking like a Biden win, and by the way, possibly a Biden blowout. I mean, he may in fact win. I think election night, the first place that we're going to look at is Florida. If Joe Biden should happen to win Florida, then the election's over and Biden has won, because there is no path to victory for Donald Trump without Florida. I think the other states will come along, but he absolutely has to win Florida. And, you know, it's very close, but Trump has lost one of his big constituencies that he won big in 2016, and that's seniors. He's losing the senior vote now, and seniors are more reliable voters. They're much more likely to vote. And right now, they are not happy with the way President Trump has handled the pandemic. And, of course, it has affected seniors more than any other population.
Linda Chavez there, former White House official under Ronald Reagan. Chris, there has been a sense of being careful, given what happened in 2016 in the minds of many people, to sort of be too confident, I suppose, in opinion polls that have shown that Joe Biden has a very large lead and has had quite a stable lead in the opinion polls for quite some time. This idea of a Biden blowout, as Linda put it there, a landslide potentially, should we be entertaining that kind of idea, or are we right to be cautious about how we predict and how we view the process of voting and what our expectations might be in this final week now before Election Day?
Well, I think it's always good to be cautious on these things. Polling has improved over the last 4 years. I think a lot of pollsters have learned some lessons from 2016. One of those lessons was to look more specifically at the battleground states, as Linda Chavez mentioned there, for example, Florida, to really look at the states that are going to make the biggest difference on November 3rd. Why is that key? Well, because those are the ones where the result tends to be closer. We've talked about this before on some of Monocle's shows. The way the electoral college system works in the U.S., of course, you can have certain states have an overrepresentation, if you will, or at least you have to win a certain amount of states in order to win the election. That means that the national opinion polls just don't matter as much. You know, in theory, Biden could win New York and California, say, by 90% to 10%. But if Trump does pull out Florida, then he's still going to win the election, and you could have a much bigger win in the popular vote for Joe Biden, say, than even Hillary Clinton did. She won the popular vote by 3 million. So all of this really comes down to the swing states. And there, it has to be said, it is still relatively close. The ballot, the polling is around the same level that it was when Hillary Clinton was running for many of these states. So that that is one reason to be cautious ahead of November 3rd. The other reason I'd say to be cautious is it's always very, very important, I think, for a front runner to not seem too encouraged by where they are in a race, because what impact might that have? Well, it might impact turnout. It might lead to Donald Trump's side, say, turning out more because they feel they're worried that they're not going to win, and some Biden voters sitting at home saying, well, this is a done deal. It looks like he's going to win. I don't need to go out and vote. So you've seen Joe Biden, even in his rhetoric in last couple of days, and you would expect him to continue to go with this rhetoric of this is close. He doesn't want to appear as a strong front runner because he needs his supporters to turn out between now and November 3rd if he's going to pull this off. It really does at this point come down to turnout as much as it does to, you know, likely voter preferences and all of that. Because at the end of the day, even if you have a lead in the opinion polls, if your people don't show up, and let's not forget in the U.S., only about 55-60% of likely voters actually vote, or 55-60% of eligible voters actually vote. Let's not forget that. So it really is about turnout, and that's what can swing things at this late stage.
Well, among one of the themes that have unfolded this year that may well boost turnout in some parts of the US are the Black Lives Matter protests that were revived following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis in May. Michelle Cressfield is a professor at the University of Birmingham, and she spoke to us on The Globalist today on the impact the Black Lives Matter protests have had on these final stages of the campaign.
So will things change for the better if Joe Biden is elected? I think it's fair to say that these issues are here to stay. If you were looking at the kinds of public reactions or hot takes when, Biden won the nomination, or even when Kamala Harris was announced as his running mate. So she was a former prosecutor in California, the state's attorney general. These are not necessarily the kind of candidates of Black Lives Matter. Many on the left don't see them actually as going far enough. And so I think that we're at least probably, hopefully with them starting from a place where I do think that they accept some of the kind of central tenets that there is a problem with the ways in which African-Americans are policed. I think that the Democrats tend to support a kind of more expansive safety net. But I don't think in terms of going as far, perhaps especially on something like defund the police, which Joe Biden has not really been in support of. And, there was a time where such a slogan would have been, kind of nonsensical. But that idea, particularly in its most robust interpretations, is gaining widespread traction. And so I do think we're going to see a showdown at some point in terms of thinking about these kinds of very leftist progressive interventions and the ways in which they might butt up against the kinds of agendas of a Biden presidency, which, so far has been leading towards a very kind of centrist approach.
Michelle Cressfield there, speaking to The Globalist earlier this morning here on Monocle 24. Daniel, listening to Michelle there, do you have a sense of what Biden, if he wins, might inherit in the context of what the Black Lives Matter movement has laid bare during the demonstrations and the activism over the past few months?
Yeah, I think it's a case of Biden being able to put his put some action behind his words. Of course, he has been a strong advocate of what has been happening to a certain extent, and will know very well of the changes that are needed. It's interesting to think about what we were talking about at the top of the show, and the fact that the Republicans might use the Supreme Court as a bit of a political weapon to block anything that might come from a Biden White House or through Congress, of course. But I think there's huge momentum here. Obviously, we've seen that in recent days of campaigning and what transpired on the streets all across the U.S. and all over the world, really, with Black Lives Matter. I think action will need to come quite quickly, and it will be interesting to see what actual plans Joe Biden puts forth. Obviously, he's watered down talk of how police and justice systems are reformed, but I think he certainly is the candidate to move this in the right direction.
And just in the final closing minutes of today's program, a question to the two of you. What will you now be keeping your eyes on in this final week of campaigning ahead of Election Day on November the 3rd, next Tuesday? Chris, to start with you, what do you think we should be looking out for now in these final frantic few days?
Well, Thomas, I'll be looking really at those early voting numbers. It's just important to emphasize, as we did at the top, that voting is already taking place. It's been interesting to see the lines of people voting in different states. It will be interesting to see whether the Supreme Court intervenes in any other ways between now and November 3rd in terms of the rules that are in place. In terms of the candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, it's hard to expect much different from them. They'll be making final pitches. It will be interesting to see how some of their surrogates, if you will, operate over the next couple of the next few days, I should say. I'll actually be watching, for example, Donald Trump's wife for the first time actually campaigning today. It'll be interesting to see that. That'll be a slight twist.
And Daniel, any twists that you'll be keeping your eyes out for? As you mentioned earlier, Canada watches a US presidential election race perhaps more keenly than any other country around the world, given that it's your largest neighbour to the south. What will you be keeping your eyes out for in these closing days of the campaign?
Yeah, that's quite interesting, especially with borders still closed, Tomas, of course, as we look ahead to next week. I think, you know, as we pointed out, it will be interesting to see how polling plays a part. Of course, Tomas, we spoke in the late hours of the election night 4 years ago on Monocle 24, when it looked like a sure shot for Hillary Clinton. And that all changed very quickly as the numbers came in. So it'll be interesting to see how this Supreme Court battle goes. Also interesting to see how Joe Biden carries himself, I think, in the next week. Do we start to see him looking very presidential, or does he get sort of dragged down to Donald Trump's level? As we know, Donald Trump will continue with the same sort of tact, lots of vitriol, lots of negativity. So interesting to see how Joe Biden presents his possible administration going forward, but also to see what happens with voting and what the pitches are for a future out of this pandemic.
Well, Daniel Bache and Chris Chermak, thank you very much, the two of you, for helping us make sense of this start to the final week of campaigning ahead of Election Day in the United States next Tuesday. Great to have you both with us on the programme today. Our studio managers today in London were Louis Allen and Zoe Kilburn. A big thanks to them, as always, too. The late edition returns at the same time tomorrow. But do stay with us here at Monocle 24 for more coverage from this final week of campaigning ahead of Election Day in the United States next Tuesday. I'm Thomas Lewis here in Toronto. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.